Hear ye, hear ye. We interrupteth this podcast death.
Are you getting married soon? Have you ever thought about hiring the Central Connecticut Renaissance Fair to provide the ambiance, food, music, entertainment, and pastoral authority for your special day? We can offer a wedding experience your guests will never forget. From the moment the jester somersaults down the aisle to the DJ with pre-modern sensibilities, you'll be entertained.
We even have pre-constructed kits for your townsfolk to put together things like maypoles to dance around and a palanquin to carry the bride in on. Not to mention a killer recipe for turkey legs. Note, we don't provide turkey legs, but can tell you what they should look like.
Our bard doubles as an officiant and will sing to you your vows, which can be as short or as eloquent as you would like. Nothing says love like a lute and a man in tights and a tunic.
Finally, your guests will not be required to wear Renaissance outfits, but they will be made fun of as mysterious time travelers. As for you and your partner, prepare to experience the pleasure of tights for those who are inclined to show off their shapely legs, and flowing gowns for those who always dreamed of cosplaying as Arwen.
For listeners of Talking Fast, we'll ensure that the DJ adds the period-appropriate F to the end of as many words as they possibly can. F.
Welcome to another episode of Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast. I'm Suzanne.
And I'm Alexis.
And we're two longtime fans of the show, excited to rewatch and recap it along the way.
This week, we are recapping Gilmore Girls Season 4, Episode 21. Last week, fights. This week, tights. Jess walks his mother down the aisle at her Renaissance-themed wedding. Luke asks his new love interest on a date. Dean confides in Rory. There you have it.
I wonder who Luke's love interest is.
His new love interest. Ooh. Yeah. So misleading, I feel like, because he asked her on a date last episode, and I don't feel like Dean really confides in Rory. So, point taken.
We could hire us, Netflix. We could do it. Before we get into things, we've replaced our kind of hodgepodge review and listener feedback with Kirk's mailbag.
Yeah.
So this week on In Kirk's Mailbag, we have an email about our episode last week that gives us some really cool tidbits, some insight into the episode.
Yeah, about TJ's brother and the movie Fatso, which you probably, if you're like us, had no idea we're connected.
Yeah, seriously. So our listener wrote, TJ is played by Michael DeLuise.
Deluse?
Hopefully I'm saying that
right. I don't know,
In the Luke Can See Her Face and last week's This Week's Tights episodes, TJ's brother is played by his real brother, David DeLuise. The short clip of Fatso showed their father, Dom, in the lead role. Showing Fatso was an homage to the DeLuise brothers. And as you noted, the theme of the movie, it was positive to the lead character. I don't think it was fat shaming, which, in parentheses, is done at other times. Mm-hmm. End quote. Sorry for the butchering of the last names. I should have practiced that beforehand.
I read it beforehand, but I didn't read it out loud beforehand. Yeah.
Exactly. I loved this insight. This is so cool to learn.
Me too. I agree that it's an homage that totally went over my head. And I did double check as well that TJ's brother is, in fact, the same actor as the dad from Wizards of Waverly Place. So that's another bookshelf element to all of this.
Cool.
But it's cool that they're actually brothers. I also never realized that TJ and his brother are IRL real brothers.
Yeah. And his brother's such like a... Like, we see him again in this episode, but he's such a minor character. Yeah. I didn't even know if we learned his name.
I'm sure we did at one point. Yeah, probably. But, we have, you know, some letters or emails in the mailbag we'll share throughout the episode. But I think to start, I would add that we got a lot of responses for this episode we're about to record. So generally, noting the enthusiasm of you all about this very exciting episode. And some people wrote in writing, I love this episode. Someone else says, honestly, one of my favorite episode tens all around. Someone else said, this is one of my favorite episodes. Or sorry, very favorite episodes. Someone else said, I love this episode, especially the goofy wedding. I laugh every time. So this isn't just me making up like four of the same message, but it seems to be we have a quorum and we've decided to vote that we all love this episode, which I love.
Yeah, I agree. I think this can lead us into our initial thoughts, but I feel like there's very little to fault with this episode. It's just like, it's such a happy and exciting episode for Luke and Lorelai. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's also good stuff for Lane. The one downside is the, you know, the Rory stuff, but can we escape that at this point? I don't think so.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like a given at this point that, like, we can't help the fact that they have fully decided to go for this Dean and Rory storyline. So to, like, continue to say, like, I wish it wasn't happening. Like, of course, I can continue to say that, but I'm acknowledging that it's going to be there. So I might as well, like, take it on its own terms to a certain extent and not let it ruin the episode for me, which it doesn't, because I definitely enjoyed this. I think it's such a good series of, like, last week, this week, then next week with the finale. Like, it all just builds so well. And, like, each episode has its own big moment, but you're still left, like, looking forward to more as well. So it's just really well crafted, I feel like.
Yeah, I fully agree. I do have things to say when we get to the Jess and Rory scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about this episode. It's just a wonderful, mostly wonderful thing.
But before we do, we have the Talking Fast segment for us. And it is my turn this week to attempt to recap the episode in 30 seconds.
Indeed. Are you prepared?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Ready, set, go.
The inn is nearly up and running. There's a horse inside for some reason. Sookie has a kitchen bag. Hooray! Lorelai also has this date with Luke going on at Liz's wedding. She helps Liz out. It's so sweet. Then there's a ceremony. There's a reception. There's people from the Renaissance. They share a very, very beautiful dance. Meanwhile, Rory has a final on Saturday. She meets this guy. She leaves that guy. She calls Dean. He comes over. Then Jess is there too because he's changed and it's awkward.
Nice.
I don't know if I needed to get to the horse and the inn detail as soon as I did.
I think the only thing you left out was Lane.
Yeah, Lane's whole storyline.
Gets a visit by Mrs. Kim.
Yes, yeah.
And Zach and Brian are girls.
They're girls.
I love that. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. So
let's slow down.
Jump right into it. I have my Stars Hollow moment right at the very beginning.
As do I.
Nice. I wondered. So we pan in on Miss Patty directing children practicing maypole dances, which just reminds me of Midsummer. I can't not see, like, maypoles are just Midsummer now.
You mean the horror movie,
the Florence
not the
Pugh
season?
Yeah.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, the horror movie. But we also get Kirk standing at the gazebo heckling the poor kids. We find out that this is because he really wanted to be the lead in the maypole dance and he was not picked. Who knows why? You know, maybe it's that he's like a 35-year-old man and these are 8-year-old children or something. And at the very least, his height would mess up the maypole dance.
His height didn't mess up Fiddler on the Roof, but
that's true.
Technically, I think Kirk wanted to be like the co-dance captain, I think it was. So I think that's Miss Patty's assistant, maybe. But still, he is her, definitely. And Lorelai responds to Miss Patty. She's like, he has 43 jobs. Like, why did he need another one? So I love that element.
It's true.
It felt very Stars Hollow. But I also love at the end, the camera like follows Lorelai and she sees Jess on this bench and she kind of like avoids him. And then the camera kind of pans around his shoulder so that we see he's reading this magazine, so we think, that's called Punk Planet. And then we see on the inside, he's actually reading the self-help book from Luke, and the workbook is there. Finally, we see the title. It says, "You're Not Alone." And I just thought, what a metaphor for Jess and Luke as well, kind of. But this is the Jess version, where it's like his hard exterior is the punk planet facade, right? Oh, and yeah. Then on the inside, it's the "You're Not Alone" help book, where he's just soft on the inside and wants to work things out.
Yeah, wants to rashly run away with Rory.
Totally. I have some questions about what he read versus what Luke read. See, interpretation is important, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
We will get there.
Yeah. After this, we go to a scene at the inn where we see Sookie and Jackson fighting like old times over radishes. And they're both, I mean, we don't see Jackson being excited about it, but Sookie is very clearly like, "We're back, baby." Yeah,
big time. We're back. Yeah. It's so good to see them bartering over vegetables and to be back in like a cozy kitchen again. Mm-hmm. It's, I think,
comforting.
Yeah, I think this might, we did go there last episode briefly, but this feels like the first time I noticed it, where it was kind of like the crew from the inn, like, meeting there, talking, and like, we just love the Independence Inn kitchen so much that I'm like, we're back, we are back in the kitchen. Yay.
Yeah, seriously. And then we get a phone call from Rory. She is still on campus despite everybody else packing up and leaving, because she has a Saturday morning final.
That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, what is the worst time you ever had a college final?
I think 9:30 a.m., which is not that bad.
That's not that bad. Yeah. Yeah.
I think at my undergrad, it's vague in my memory, but I want to say we had our finals like in our class time, maybe.
Okay.
Or something like that. Or I just got lucky, because here, when I was a TA, the students had a final at 8 a.m. and normally we met at like 11 or noon or something. And so that might be the worst time. It's just, I wasn't taking the final, so it didn't affect me quite as much. But here, like where I'm at, where you were, like the university does have Saturday finals, which wasn't a thing at my undergrad. Like they weren't on the weekends. So It is interesting to think about how different schools do them. But no matter what, the universal feeling is like, if you have one really late in the week, like Rory does, and everyone else is leaving and like they won't let you take it early or anything like that, it is a big bummer. What about you?
Yeah. I've had them all over the place. I think in undergrad, I had one at 7 a.m., which was pretty rough. And then I had an exam in graduate school at our university that was like at, it started at like 6:30 p.m. or something and went late. And it's also like, it was also a fall semester, so it was already dark by like 4 o'clock. So we got out and it was like practically midnight.
Oh my God.
That was old English. I guess it set the tone.
Yeah. The dark ages.
Yeah. Been kind of all over the place. If I can help it, if I could help it as a teacher, I don't think I actually ever set a final except for when I was TAing for classes.
Yeah, I think so. I did take home exams a little bit when I had some literature classes, but yeah, never actually an in-person sit-down exam. Like, it's pretty standard for Rory and many others.
Yeah, which is just interesting. In literature classes, I feel like exams aren't as big of a thing. Mm-hmm. But I could also see Asher definitely doing an exam.
Oh, yeah. Do you think this is for Asher's
long
class?
Essay questions. Maybe not.
Because Paris is leaving,
I could
actually see
him doing it.
So it's probably not.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she said
true.
It was like philosophy, I think, actually.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say Asher could be, I could see him as one of those professors who leaves it to his TAs to proctor the exam.
Totally. But the other main topic of conversation in this phone call is the J word. Rory says, mm-hmm. not Jesus. Or Mel Gibson, I think.
Oh, yeah, this must have been like when The Passion of the Christ came out.
But Lorelai says, no, like Jess. And she talks about how she's seen him around town. Does Rory want to know when she sees him? And Rory seems like equal parts chill and awkward about mm-hmm. this. You know, like in the past, we've wondered, is Rory putting on like a performance of like, I'm fine, it doesn't affect me. But then underneath, she's actually quite emotionally affected. And here I felt like she did seem fairly chill about it. Obviously, I feel like because mm-hmm. of her preoccupation with Dean right now. But then I also felt she was kind of weird about it, because then she started to go into yeah. the classic Gilmore of like talking and talking and listing and listing of like, well, if you see him like four times in this day, I don't want to know, but like yada, yada, yada. So how do you think mm-hmm. she actually felt about the J word?
I don't know. It's so hard to tell because we really didn't ever get her like emotionally processing his leaving and everything. Right. And I just don't understand how of all her past boyfriends to try and take up with again, she picked Dean. I guess convenience. Yep. He was there. Yeah. But yeah, I just don't. Because the last time she saw him, he said, I love you, and drove away. I would imagine, like, I would expect somebody to be a bit discombobulated about that, like a bit unsure about seeing the person again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, she seems way too cool about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, it is kind of wild in retrospect the way that we don't get so much from Rory because of her lack of introspection. Or at least we assume mm-hmm. her lack of introspection because we're not conveyed any of it. You're so, like, yeah, truly, who doesn't, like, think or obsess over someone telling you they love you and then running away? Like, you can't, mm-hmm. like, why didn't we get a scene from her yeah. talking to Lane about that? Or, exactly. you know, like, give me your journal with a voiceover for all I care. Like, it will be fine.
Yeah, tell Paris about it or something.
Yeah, anything.
Get some funny relationship wisdom from Paris. Mm-hmm. That would have been a great scene.
Yeah, but it just leaves us wondering because we did not receive that. And we just have to guess. But for now, yeah, they end the call. And Lorelai walks out into the main part of the inn, which is like looking even more final than it did the last time we saw it. It's looking really good and like finished for the most part. Like, minus furniture, kind of. Except for the fact that there's a horse, the horse Cletus specifically, Cletus. In the middle of the inn. And it was a funny joke, like a good sight gag to, like, see the horse in the background before Lorelai realized. So we had a fun little audience moment there. But I don't fully understand how the horse actually got into the inn. That is never explained. Yeah,
just walk in the front door.
The doors aren't big enough, I feel like, but maybe they are. Maybe they are.
Yeah, I think a horse could get through a front door.
Okay.
It might have to, like, bow its head, but...
Squeeze its hips, maybe. Suck it in.
They could get... Okay. They could get through. Yeah, I don't know. It was funny. Mm-hmm. We're still a bit unsure about how they afforded horses when they had to take out loans from friends. But anyways, after this, we're... at Yale again, and it's just a kind of a scene of everybody leaving. First we get, I think, one of our last side of Glenn, because I don't remember if he shows up in next season, but he's heading home to his girlfriend, his hot date, who he shows a picture to Rory, and it's a picture of her as a kid, and it's just like, could you be any more sus, Glenn? Yeah. Like, come on.
I think, like, you know, they use Glenn at the newspaper for a while, and then they use mm-hmm. him, like, around the dorm. And I just, like, my hypothesis is that they just ran out of material for him. So they decided at the very end to make him quite creepy as, like, well, that will be funny. Because last episode, he's spying on someone through the window. This episode, Rory's implying his girlfriend looks 12. And then he gets super defensive when he says it's a picture of her as a kid. And he's like, she can drive. And it's just very creepy.
That's very sketchy.
And I didn't feel like, I'm like... Justice for the Glenn character, I don't remember him being this creepy, but the fact that it's, like, his final appearances that I can recall, like, make this part of his character more memorable, I feel like, you know, because it's the final mm-hmm. note, and it's just a creepy final note.
Yeah. Oh, Glenn. So much for the Glenn we just see struggling a keg up the stairs. That could have been our last sight of him. That would have been funny.
The spring break one was pretty funny, too. Struggling it down.
Yeah, that was great. Also, Tana, who we haven't seen for a long time.
I even forgot
her name until it came up in the captions, finally. She has a boyfriend named Chester, and they seem to have really found each other because he lost a dare that they had set, and now he has to speak for the entire day in cliches, and he's really committed to that. Which I find kind of funny.
Yeah.
There are plenty of cliches out there. You can almost hold a conversation with them.
Completely.
But it is kind of awkward and weird.
Yeah, but it seemed like, you know. Tana's awkward and weird. So it seemed like mm-hmm. they met each yeah. other's, they were on each other's level in that way. I'm like, they seem pretty sweet together.
Yeah, agreed.
I will say, this is the beginning of a little bit of Rory's storyline with the recurring idea that she's been single all year and she's gone through a dry spell and everyone brings it up to her. And that's going to be my Friday night dinner critique. I just felt like it was just a little forced. And it's kind of funny because it's meant to be forced. Like, Rory calls it out later. She's like, am I like cloaked in loneliness or something? Like, why is everyone talking to me about how single I've been? So I like it more then when it's a bit more meta, but I just found some of these conversations a little clunky. Like, some reason Tana has this like poster board of all of these pictures of people and she's going through them and like, here's this couple and this couple and here's Rory alone. Oh, here's Rory with like the statue of the Yale guy. Like, and then Paris is like, oh yeah, you have had a dry spell. And here's Leonard, Asher's son. And it's all just kind of like, it just felt like out of left field.
Yeah.
And just kind of setting exposition, I guess, for her and Dean and kind of Jess mm-hmm. as well. But like we said, in such a good episode, like, I'm just kind of picking something that was like a minor annoyance level. But yeah, how did you feel about all of this? Like, Rory, you've been so single all year long.
I thought it was kind of like a repetition of Lorelai and the cats last episode.
Right, yeah.
It's like making a big deal out of something that's not a big deal, mm-hmm. but society's so obsessed with romance that if you're not having it, something's wrong with you. I don't know. I thought it was, yeah, just kind of annoying. I didn't really get angry about it, but it was just kind of annoying, especially when Emily sets her up with a total dud.
Yeah, yeah. Or like even Tana. Like, part of this is like, oh, look, Tana and her boyfriend and Janet and her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And they don't know about Paris necessarily. But it's like, oh, we never even knew Tana had a boyfriend. But she has to have one in this yeah. scene to, like, hone this point. When it could have just been, like, Tana on her own saying goodbye. Like, Janet says goodbye. Mm-hmm. Seeing their room empty actually made me a little sentimental. Because it was like, I feel like we just moved in there, you know? Like, yeah. And it's empty. Time flies.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get them back in the dorms next season.
Good.
I think that's the last one in the dorms, maybe.
I think so.
Yeah. Yale is moving on. Yeah, Paris gives Rory the number for Asher's son, who is recently divorced.
Yeah, Leonard.
And it sounds just like a huge catch.
He's like a hedge fund manager or something.
Yeah, something like that. Wow. Thanks, Paris.
Dear me. From here, we follow Lorelai later on in the day as she goes to Kim's Antiques. I guess even after all of this horse stuff, they still have room in the budget for these knockers, door knockers, which of course leads to a joke about knockers. And yeah. James Madison liking knockers, things like that. And I gave my just ass attack to Mrs. Kim here. After Lorelai has been making these jokes and acts like, oh, sorry, you wouldn't get it, Mrs. Kim says, it's a double entendre. I've been in this country for 20 years. I know things. Nice. It was quite good. And
classic.
Like after that, she charges Lorelai $90. And then even later, Lorelai pisses her off more and she ends up charging her $140. And I just love that. But, I mean, the reason she gets pissed off is because Lorelai offers her some more advice about Lane. And, like, Lorelai is kind of giving her some tough love advice. Like, you know, you kind of, you gotta, like, reach out. Like, you can't just use me as your go-between with Lane's mail. Like, you should take it, all of that kind of stuff. And we'll see that Mrs. Kim does take this to heart later on. But I don't blame her for kind of like just getting annoyed with Lorelai in the moment and being like, fine, $140 to you.
Yeah, petty. Mm-hmm. The knockers joke also reminded me of Young Frankenstein. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
It's a Mel Brooks movie. It's hilarious. It's got Gene Wilder in it. And it's like a parody Frankenstein movie. And there's at least one joke about huge knockers. It's great. A great movie.
Yeah, you don't hear knockers every day as a boobs euphemism, yeah. You know? It's a good one.
Yeah. Kind of old school. Yeah.
Like James Madison, apparently, who might have owned these door knockers.
Yeah. Great. I want to see her, like, lineage for all of the, like, all of the things in the antique store. She always has them, like, connected to some founding father or something like that. I just want to see, you know, her actual records or if she's just making everything up, which I kind of suspect.
I feel like it's a technique, like a selling tactic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure some antiquers, like Emily, would require authentication.
And then she'd be like, okay, fine. We'll lower the price. Yeah. But Lorelai is not going to do that.
Yeah. Emily would pay, like, $2,000 for a knocker from James Madison. I bet.
Yeah, totally.
Anyways, after this, we go to Luke's, where Liz and her friends are hanging out. Sounds like they're about to go to a bachelorette party.
Yeah, it has that vibe.
Yeah. Luke has been roped into more stuff for the wedding, and he has been cooking turkey legs. I just completely forgot. Is Carrie the Liz's friend who's obsessed with Luke?
Yeah.
I can't remember her name.
Yeah, they call her Crazy Carrie.
Okay, yeah. She is constantly hitting on Luke, and she makes a turkey leg joke at him, asking him to take off his pants and show them his turkey legs.
I thought that might have been, like, the most scandalous joke I've heard on this show. Yeah. Like, he's like, what do turkey legs look like? And she says, drop your pants and we'll see. And I just couldn't believe that, like, in that Scott Patterson article where he was talking about when he felt objectified with the butt jokes when he was, like, it was his butt when he was, like, looking at a stove or something. I am much more, like, this scene is far more objectifying of Luke. Like, you envision a turkey, like, it's just, like, Carrie is quite forward, we could say.
Yeah. I feel like later on when he stumbles over his words telling her to, like, keep things closed or open up or whatever, I thought that was a even dirtier joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But during all of this, a UPS-type guy arrives wearing, you know, the classic brown shirt and shorts, and he's got a package for Liz. Yep. At this point, Jess has also come down to head out. He's, I don't remember exactly where he's headed, but Liz, like, introduces him to all of the other women and stuff. And he clocks who this UPS guy is, but Luke does not until the package is delivered to Liz. Mm-hmm. And he begins stripping and dancing in the middle of Luke's, which is such an odd venue for a striptease.
So many windows. Broad daylight.
Yeah, Jess just outside, like, making a smirking face at Luke, who's stuck in there watching his sister get a lap dance, which would just be so weird, so awkward.
Yeah,
but they're all loving it. They are. So
I noticed two things about this. One is that the mailman stripper reminded me of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the Kyle character, who is the mailman.
I haven't seen that.
He's a very, like, sexual kind of mailman. It's very funny, yeah. Like, this guy. And then secondly, the song is, like, the relaxed jump to it song, yeah. That is that's also used in the proposal strip scene.
That was the one that it reminded me of.
Yeah, so it was, like,
it's a good movie.
That is a really good movie, and a good strip scene as well. So, good memories.
So awkward.
Yeah.
And this, like, coming on the heels of Luke being so freaked out to get a lap dance that he disappeared his own lap in last
Liz episode. Does not seem to have such concerns. And good for her. You know, have a good time, Liz.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, Jess has escaped from this situation quickly. He told Luke he needs to get batteries. Oh, I think that's because obviously he needs some for the cassette player or whatever for that audiobook, right? Or maybe he has a Walkman. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, he seems like a Walkman type of guy.
But he goes to Dosey's, and this was almost like a blink and you miss it. Like, it opens quickly with him grabbing the batteries, and then he goes to a line right behind Dean. And I almost wondered if I had, like, missed a portion of the scene where they, like, look at each other and feel awkward before they do at the end. Because this actually didn't have nearly as much tension as I would have thought it would have had. Especially compared to the end of the episode.
Yeah. I was expecting at least, like, because after Dean is done checking out, he's like, Kirk is like yelling out everything that he's buying. It's a lot of stuff for Lindsay. So Dean is like, it's for my wife. And he looks grumpy and side-eyes Jess. I was at least expecting Jess to have a retort or something to that. But he doesn't.
He doesn't.
It just seemed like, I almost felt, like they had cut something out or something.
Yeah.
But I don't
know. Like, I understand why the scene is in the episode, especially because they're going to run into each other again later in even worse circumstances. But I feel like they could have done even more with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, really build attention.
Maybe it was supposed to show that, like, they're both over it, but then having Rory there later on will yet again ignite the feud.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe Jess doesn't make a quip because he thinks Dean is no longer, like, any sort of threat.
I mean, he is buying stuff for his wife. So, like, he could think that fairly. He's like, Dean is out of my way.
Yeah, exactly. But, of course, that is not the case.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
After this, we go to a Friday night dinner, which is kind of, as far as Friday night dinners go, pretty uneventful. Richard isn't there, so Lorelai keeps trying to, like, catch Emily out on things about, like, why Richard isn't there, trying to catch her out to say that they have separated, but Emily, of course, never falls for it. She has a different agenda, which is to pry into Rory's love life and figure out what's going on with Rory. And she finds that Rory is single, and also that she's going to be at Yale the next day at a certain time and place, which Rory really should have been a bit more suspicious of, I think.
I agree. I use this scene to nominate my Rory's bookshelf, and it's kind of, like, tangential in a way, but it's about Emily, Lorelai, and Rory. Because I was recently listening to the House of R podcast on tropes and the Golden Trio. So
perfect.
It was on my mind, and just they were in general talking about the use of trios in all different kinds of, like, books, movies, and shows. And so naturally, as I was listening to them, I was thinking of groups of three that I've seen in all the media I consume, and naturally I thought of Gilmore Girls, and I was thinking, like, I wonder if there is a trio, like, you know, Rory is sort of, you might think of Rory or Lorelai as a hero, but, like, Rory's friendships are kind of fragmented. Like, she has her thing with Paris and she has her thing with Lane. They're not really, like, a trio, you know. But then I was like, hey, I'm overlooking the main three, like Emily, Lorelai, and Rory. And so part of this podcast was describing a specific kind of way of thinking about trios, which is the Freudian trio. And this is when each character represents either the id, the superego, or the ego. And I get these confused all the time. The TV Tropes website that I looked this up at as a refresher is that the id is the character who represents like emotional and instinctual desires. So I thought Lorelai might be the id, the emotional one. The superego represents the rules and social conventions. I thought that might be Emily. And then the ego is the one who's often like reconciling the id and the superego. Yeah. So I thought that was Rory. And I thought,
oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, I thought this scene actually was really good, like case study of this, because Lorelai is being kind of emotional and reactive about her parents like being separated, and she's bugging Emily, trying to like figure this out. And often, you know, like those two are the ones that kind of like can have conflict. And then Rory's being the reconciler, where she's like telling Lorelai like clearly they're having a marital issue, like. Pressuring her isn't going to help. And at the end, she's like, we're all moving on to new topics. So she's kind of like trying to mediate between the two of them. So I thought, I don't know, maybe that will be a way moving forward to read the three of them and their relationship. Maybe not. I don't know. But how do you think about that?
I love that. It's also perfect with the announcement of Kelly Bishop's upcoming book, The Third Gilmore Girl, I believe is the title. Yeah.
We'll definitely be reading and reviewing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that explanation. I feel like we've always kind of seen Gilmore Girls, like the title is referring to all three of them, even though Rory and Lorelai are technically the main characters. But there's like no way to separate Emily and Lorelai's relationship from any of the plots of the show. Yeah. So, yeah, I really like that. And it's amazing how easily that maps onto the characters.
Yeah, so many
things. It's kind of like the, it's like with the Joseph Campbell stuff a couple weeks ago. It's like once you learn about these tropes or these tools in storytelling, you can't escape them. Mm-hmm. Even if authors and storytellers aren't consciously thinking of them, they're just so ingrained in how we perceive what stories are and how stories work that it's almost unavoidable.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see it in our own little show here.
Completely agreed. Yeah. So yeah, moving forward to another trio. we don't have to analyze every time we see three people, but you know, Lane, Zach, and Brian are at home sorting out their bills, like down to the individual phone call, which means you know they're really like roughing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not just like splitting it equally three ways. But Lane gets a visit from her aunt, who's being quite formal, offering to arrange a social call for Mrs. Kim. And Mrs. Kim has offered her three possible times. If those don't work, she'll offer three more. And if those don't work, she'll rescind the offer. So it was really humorous, really fun.
So official.
And we realize that Mrs. Kim, though she was annoyed by Lorelai, is taking her advice, and she's kind of extending an olive branch, so we can presume here, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I'm proud of Mrs. Kim for taking this step.
Me too.
And I love that this message from Aunt June reads like a work email.
Even more formal than a lot of emails I get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited for their potential reconciliation. We shall see.
Mm-hmm.
The next scene is the beginning of the big scene for the episode, the wedding. So first we start off up in Luke's, where Luke is polishing his shoes with old polish, and this is where my Rory's bookshelf moment comes up. TJ comes out dressed in his tights and nothing else. But he looks at Luke's shoes and is like, the Queer Eye guys are really against old polish. And so I wanted to nominate Queer Eye for my Rory's bookshelf. This is the original iteration of Queer Eye. It was originally called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And I remember watching a few episodes of that original series. It was on Bravo, and it had a pretty, I mean, it still had the like five, you know, queer guys helping out people, but it was more geared towards style and stuff like that. And it was a lot more tongue in cheek than the current Queer Eye is, which is like super,
we will improve your life,
self-help type of thing.
Very yeah. earnest and genuine. Yeah. Not very earnest. They're very serious. Yeah.
I do enjoy the new Queer Eye. I feel like I really enjoyed the first couple seasons, and now I'm just kind of like every single episode is basically the same. The people are cool.
Yeah, I kind of stopped watching after the first couple seasons mm-hmm. for the same. Like, oh, I feel like I get it, you know?
Yeah, they're all going to say about the same stuff. The biggest thing for me was in the current iteration was Bobby, mm-hmm. who does the home decoration, like the cool stuff that he managed to get done in such a short period of time. It reminded me of my preteen days watching TLC with mm-hmm. my parents on Friday night, you know, Trading Spaces and stuff.
What was the one? Was it like Extreme Home Makeover?
Oh, yeah.
The guy who'd be like, move that bus and reveal the house. Exactly. That was a good one, too.
Yeah. Where they'd put like the most outlandish things into kids' bedrooms as if those kids were never going to grow up and change their tastes, and they'd have to completely be like 16 years old living in a bedroom that was like made into a jungle for Tarzan because that's what he really liked when he was five.
Exactly. Oh my god.
Oh my gosh. What a time those days were.
But getting back to, so we like started with style, fashion, Queer Eye and whatnot because of TJ and his tights. This will mm-hmm. be a consistent thing throughout this episode. TJ and his tights. He loves them. It's a really good, well, I guess my question is, do you like this bit or not? And as context, we did in our mailbag receive mm-hmm. at least one comment in particular about this where someone said, TJ and the tights, I can't. He makes me so uncomfortable every time he speaks. So we do have like, I think we'll have to poll because this is one person. Then we'll have us. So I'm very curious to see how do people feel? Yes or no on if this is funny or not. I will admit I find it funny. How about you?
I agree. I think I said recently that TJ's sense of humor, while I might find it annoying in person, on TV, I find it hilarious. Yeah. Especially when he's like juxtaposed with Luke, who is so stoic. Mm-hmm. And TJ, like TJ, I would not call smart necessarily, but the way he can rib on Luke's stoicism mm-hmm. is hilarious.
Maybe he's wise, like not smart, but wise.
Yeah, emotionally mature, I would say that as well. Emotionally intelligent.
I just love that he loves tights so much. Like he just like has discovered them and they're not like a very masculine clothing item, right? So it's just so fun that he is discovering them for the first time. And I'm all about comfortable clothes. So like, I agree with him. I think the only part where I get slightly annoying might be when it's like, I'd rather him be like effusive about Liz during the wedding rather than about tights. But like, they mostly strike a balance where it's not like he's like completely ignoring her or anything. Yeah. But he is sort of having a little love affair with tights in the midst of his love and wedding.
I feel like in the later scenes, it becomes almost like a coping mechanism type thing to rely on his humor when he is overwhelmed and nervous.
Yeah, a little.
Like walking down the aisle or afterwards, after the wedding and stuff.
That's a good way to think about
when you would expect him to, he's probably super emotional, but to portray that he's just talking about the tights. Oh, TJ.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's hilarious.
Quickly, before we get back, before we move on to the ceremony, I think we did skip over one brief scene at Yale. This is when...
Oh, yeah,
sorry. No, totally fine. It was quite brief. This is when Emily forces this guy, Graham Sullivan, on Rory, who has just been, like, minding her time packing. She's drinking this like drink Which I found, like, I'm like, oh, I don't think we've seen Rory drink at all except for the spring break episode. So it's fairly notable that, like, she's drinking. This is a concoction everyone in the dorm made with their leftover alcohol, and they, like, poured it all in. And so of anything to be drinking, it's quite shocking that Rory is drinking that because it has to be bad.
Yeah.
But Emily shows up, and there's this guy, and Emily is being quite, like, I don't, it's very clear what she's doing, and the guy seems like all right at this point. I feel like he's bantering. He doesn't seem like 100% boring, and he boxes, he helps her box something and invites her for real. Like, he could have just been like, scram, like, I don't want to actually go out with you, but he does seem into her and into having her join him and his friends.
Yeah.
And at this time, it seemed more like it would be like a co-ed gathering. And then later on, it's really just like a bro fest. So this really takes a turn. But like at this moment, I was like, well, this seems fine. Not like jumping for joy, but like fine. You know, it's like this guy isn't Dean. That's nice.
It reminded me of the John Hamm stuff, like trying to bring in a potential love interest from Emily's world.
Doesn't work.
Just doesn't work out for Lorelai or Rory until Logan.
Yeah. But he's even like beyond Emily's world in a way, it seems because they, we'll get there.
Yeah. The Gilmores are embarrassing compared to the Huntsburgers.
Shocking. Shocking. The slander.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, back to the wedding, downstairs and out in the town square, Lorelai hops over. She arrives very buoyantly, which Luke had said that he was going to go and pick her up last episode. So I don't know what happened there, but either way, they head over to the wedding.
I felt like she was giving friend energy.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, for now.
We'll see, like, the exact moment that changes,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
TJ's brother, real brother, seats them, makes fun of them for being time travelers, which I always love. I've never actually been to a Ren Fair, amazingly, as a medievalist. Mm-hmm. I hope to go to my first one this year.
Yay.
But I would like someday to have a costume that I wear. I won't have one this year, so I will be a time traveler into the fun world of Renaissance fairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the topic of what they're wearing, I do have my Lorelai's Closet nomination for Lorelai here. A truly iconic outfit. She looks so pretty in pink. She's got a nice dress on with flowers on it, and then she also has flowers in her hair. And luckily, I think everyone can picture it, so for once it doesn't matter that I'm trying to describe something on a podcast. I just think she's so pretty. And it was hard because I also wanted to give it to Liz as well. It was a good episode for gowns and dresses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it reminded me of our good old Bracebridge dinner with the plethora of costumes
and
fun clothing.
I feel like the costumes are even better here.
Oh, yeah, they're so much better. Like,
more budget.
We'll get to it in a minute. But after they've sat down, first Crazy Carrie comes over and is hitting on Luke again. She's got one of the, like, classic Tudor dresses that is very enhancing of the bosoms. But she's telling them that the wedding is going to be postponed for a couple minutes because Liz has a tear in her dress. Lorelai, our resident seamstress, heads off to help out with this. I love that this wedding, there's like no cold feet whatsoever from either party. They're both excited about it. Liz is talking about how it's her first, I think she's been married four times before, but it's her first wedding sober.
Yeah.
So, And she's also talking about how good TJ is for her and all of that stuff. And it kind of drives home the fact that he really has been a change from her past patterns. Mm-hmm. Luke comes in and Jess comes in and he's ready to walk his mom down the aisle. Liz finds out that Rory and Jess dated. Mm-hmm. Lorelai, I thought, was very forgiving of Jess here. Liz is like, I hope he didn't break her heart. And Lorelai says, like, no, it was mutual. Which, yeah, it was very forgiving past Lorelai in some circumstances. Other people might not have said the same thing.
Yeah, I thought it was nice of her, like, covering for Jess a little bit and to be there at all to help Liz. And there's like foreshadowing majorly when her and Liz are talking about
sister-in-law.
You could be a great sister-in-law, and like their hair is done the same way. Even I don't know, it was a sweet scene, I thought.
Yeah Absolutely. As Lorelai is leaving Miss Patty's, she gets a glance into Jess's bag where she finds the book. And she kind of smirks a little bit, and we know Lorelai, she loves to make fun of people and stuff, so we kind of know what's coming.
Oh, and I do want to ask, like, we are about to see Jess and Liz walk down the aisle, and we learn that he's walking her down the aisle maybe when they were getting ready in Luke's, or now, I can't quite remember, but what did you make of that? Like, when did Jess have a change of heart? He seemed so adamant against it last episode, and first of all, I don't know why he was so against it then. He seems fine with it now. Like, was it purely to be like to push against TJ in that moment? Because now he's doing it. I'm like, when did he change his mind? I don't know.
I kind of felt like the moment he decided to come at all was the moment he decided to participate fully. Like, I don't know if he could have come and then avoided walking Liz down the aisle. That would have been a huge ditch.
Yeah.
Worse than just not coming at all. But yeah, that's a good point. We never get much of his thought process on that. But I'm glad he's here.
Totally.
He looks a bit funny in a oversized dress shirt.
I don't love the shirt. It's a, like,
yeah, me neither.
Kind of yellow, I think, to match Liz's dress, but it's just not that
a great
good
color. But then Lorelai swings back into the wedding, and this is when the ceremony begins. It starts off with flower girls and a jester somersaulting down the aisle, and then TJ comes down the aisle in my Lorelai's closet nomination with his tights, and he's got like a Tudor style doublet straight out of like Henry VIII's portraits or something. And I definitely, like, this was what they were going for in the Bracebridge dinner, this time period. And the costumes are just leaps and bounds better. Like, this actually looks like it could have been a costume off of a costume rack for an actual period. I mean, the top, not the tights. For an actual period film. Not saying it's, like, 100% accurate or anything, but it just looks like so much, such better quality. It's got all the trimmings and everything. And I loved it. I thought it was hilarious also. He's very, very, I don't know. He's just TJ. And it's funny that he's wearing this style while Liz is wearing a completely, it's not close to any period dress. If anything, the silhouette is closer to a medieval style dress, which would be a good 200, 300 years before TJ's outfit. So they're not really really coming together on time periods, but the aesthetic is there, and it's fun. And Liz also arrives like in a throne type thing on a platform,
regal,
which is cute. We get the marriage ceremony. The hippie troubadour, who we haven't seen
for a while. That's who that was. Oh my god, I thought I knew him. Oh my god, that's so good.
The last time we saw him was when he was having the competing vegetable stand against Taylor, I think, which was quite a while ago. It's been a bit.
Oh my god. That just clicked in my head.
But he is wearing tights and a tunic and singing and playing on a lute. And then he asks them for their vows.
Before that, he says, "You may plant the ceremonial sword." And like,
yeah,
Jess, Lorelai, and Luke are all trying their very hardest not to laugh during all of this. Yeah. And I
would be too.
I liked the way that it was like all three of them were kind of having the same reaction. But Luke and Lorelai are like whispering, like, "Think of something not funny. Think of something not funny," the whole time. And oh, it's good.
Yeah. It is such a comedic wedding.
Yeah. But then the vows, you know, are actually quite sweet. Although it's funny because he's like, "Yeah, do you want to share your vows?" And Liz turns to TJ and says, "TJ?" And he's like, "Yeah." Like, I can't do it like he did. But I was like laughing my ass off at that.
So cute.
It was really funny. But then Liz is really sweet. And then he responds also, mentions tights at the start, but he brings it around because it's about how he has to be off the cuff because he didn't have pockets. And he says simply, "I love ya." And that's all they need. They kiss, and Luke and Lorelai say, "That wasn't funny at all." It was very nice.
Yeah, very touching. I have to ask you, as somebody who will potentially be writing vows in the near future, are you guys planning to do your own vows, or are you doing like script type vows? If so, what's your prompt for vow writing?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I was thinking about my own future wedding while watching this episode. And for context, I am getting married shortly in May. So kind of probably around the same time Liz is. This is probably May for her as well, actually. And
Maypole.
Yeah, the Maypole, that's right. Maybe I'll have a Maypole.
Yeah, don't expect me to participate.
It's funny. I could see us doing our own vows. If we do a script, it will be like an updated one that like we write ourselves or something like that. Sometimes nowadays people do their vows privately.
So I like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like we'll do something, but it's certainly not going to be the old school textbook version where you're
religious
like
type things.
Yeah So
I will obey you.
That will definitely not be happening. So this maybe I'll take a note or two from Liz and TJ here. We'll see.
I'm trying to remember my siblings' weddings. My oldest brother and his wife, I believe, wrote vows. They had a medieval-themed wedding.
Really?
They were all dressed in, because they, at the time, were taking part in a lot of LARPing.
That's so fun.
Live-action role-playing. So, and I wrote, like, part of their wedding ceremony in Old Norse.
Oh, that's
them.
So cool. Did you dress up?
I didn't, because I was living in Denmark at the time, so I, like, flew out the day before and had to fly back the next day.
Oh, wow.
I didn't have a costume or anything, so... Yeah, I was there. That was all.
Well,
I
you were
do.
The resident expert too. You know, that's important.
Yeah, my other brother, I think they also wrote their own vows. But my sister and her husband did like just simple, script type vows. It was a very short wedding, which is fine with me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was me. I think I would do script vows like the ones from The Corpse Bride.
Oh.
Those are good ones.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we should ask people, what are some good vows? I can get some inspiration.
Write that down.
Yeah. But following the wedding ceremony here, we have another sort of mid-wedding plotline pop up with Mrs. Kim visiting Lane. And it's funny, I will say. Lane has whipped Brian and Zach into shape. They are in like collared shirts and ties. They look very formal. And when Lane opens the door, Mrs. Kim is like kind of acting like normal. She hands her the snack she brought. But then Lane says like, "We will like this." And Mrs. Kim is like, "Who is we?" And she opens the door further. And Mrs. Kim sees Zach and Brian. And she's very thrown off. Lane can see this, but she's kind of trying to just keep things moving along. So she's like showing her, giving her a tour, offering her tea. But Mrs. Kim is like staggering behind her, just like completely overcome with like just completely overwhelmed by everything she's processing and seeing. And she just ends up running out like wordlessly. And we'll find out that she runs to Lorelai, who's at this reception now, which is out in the town square. And I thought this was like pretty sweet that she turns to Lorelai mm-hmm. in this like panicked moment, and she's kind of going on and
Boys.
And Lorelai's kind of just like, what are you talking about? She tries to get like the situation down, and Mrs. Kim says she's dirty about Lane, which is like,
so sad.
And Lorelai's like, no, she's not. And her advice as she talks her down is to think of Zach and Brian as girls, like tall, awkward mm-hmm. girls who are there for Lane. And this seems like it will do the trick, you know, just a little mental trick of your brain. Like, and Mrs. Kim is kind of like, okay, I think I can work with that, as we'll see a bit later.
I loved that. I had never picked up on her saying that Lane was dirty before. And like her assumption must have been that like they were just living as a throuple or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which
or the fact
is not the case.
The fact that Mrs. Kim said she, to this point in her life, has never been alone with boys before.
Yeah.
Like,
just
that's probably part of what she thinks. Like, the bar is so low for purity, you know, with her. She's never even.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Like Mike Pence.
Wow.
I don't want to compare her to Mike Pence, really, but like his comment about wanting to be alone in a room with a woman who isn't his wife. Like, oh, purity, culture, weird.
But I do really like that she, like, just this one little mental trick is going to be helpful for her. And she's trying.
It
shows, that's more than
like,
we've seen for a long time.
Yeah, it shows how much she cares and really wants mm-hmm. this to work, that she will, like, do this to make it work.
Then we continue with the rest of the reception, which we see a couple little scenes, first of Jess sitting with a guy talking about his life in prison, and then we see TJ going on about his tights, which he calls air pants. He thinks they're gonna be the next big thing for men. And then Liz is talking about how glad she was that Jess was there. And then we get a bit of a kerfuffle, rock in the road, per se, where Lorelai and Luke are sitting down, and Lorelai brings up the book that she saw in Jess's bag, thinking that she and Luke are going to mock it together, have some of their fun banter. But at first, Luke is, like, kind of awkwardly laughing, and then he's like, gets pretty defensive. He's like, what's wrong with him wanting to improve himself and like learn how to love and all of that stuff. And then he just gets up and walks away, and Lorelai is left kind of very confused. And it was just an interesting scene. I wonder if she put together that Luke might have read this book. I don't know, but I thought it was an interesting interaction. We don't often see them like at odds like that. So it was interesting. And in such a romantic episode for them to have that little roadblock was kind of cool.
Yeah, right. Because you're maybe expecting everything to just build and build really well for them. But this is a little dip before it continues to go up. But yeah, she's like genuinely confused. And I could see like why she would think Luke would mock this book, because we saw how much she mocked it last episode. So she's like, what did I say? Like, what did I do wrong? And I do think by the end she's putting together at least that, you know, like either maybe he got the book for Jess or he approves of it. But I think she could probably guess that like he read it too, because it probably helps her put two and two together with his like changed behavior. Though she still seems to be like figuring out his changed behavior throughout the entire episode, I would say. But, you know, before we get back to Luke and Lorelai, we have the Saturday Orphans Bar gathering, which is, I don't know how else to describe it. I guess now that I'm like recapping, maybe I would make my Friday night dinner the fact that like that this kind of scene is interrupting the flow of, like, the wedding scenes, yeah. maybe. Because it is a little, like, well, why do I have to leave Luke and Lorelai to go to Graham Sullivan, who I'll never see again, mm-hmm. who's hanging out with the guys. They're drunk and dumb. Rory's sitting alone at a table for some reason. And yeah. he's like, what's up? If it gets exciting over here, I'll stay here, which is like, yeah, ugh.
Gross.
And he seems like exponentially worse than before. And mm-hmm. sometimes like guys' friends can have that effect on them, I feel like, in a social yeah. scenario like this, especially like college guys. But yeah, she's definitely trying to get out of this. And I commend her for that. That she's not willing to get in the car with these drunk drivers, which is also another bad mm-hmm. thing that they're doing. And she's like, I'm going to get a cab. And he offers her money and she doesn't take it. But I think she should have, because she doesn't actually have money.
She definitely should
have. Like, yeah. And she thinks for a moment. The waiter tells her, like, oh, don't walk around this area. And so we see her make a phone call. She doesn't know who else to call. And even though we don't hear the name, I think we all know without a doubt who she called. Dean, of course, who we will see a little bit later. But yeah, grumble. Grumble, grumble, grumble.
Yeah. Why that would be her first choice, just beyond me.
I know. Like, well, I guess Paris is on her way to Europe. Maybe she knows Lorelai's at the wedding. I don't know if Lane has a car. I guess maybe her options are a little limited, but still.
I guess that's true.
You could, I don't know. What if the cab takes you to your dorm and then you have money at your dorm? So you could be like, I'll be right back.
Or takes you to the ATM and then to your dorm. Yeah, just so many options. But we'll get back to that. The next scene is at back at Lane's, where Zach and Brian are now playing a video game and things are back to kind of a relaxed state. But then there's a knock on the door and Lane goes out over and opens it, and it's Mrs. Kim. Mm. And the boys like stand up straight into shape right away.
I know. I thought that was really like of all of our complaints about the way they are so far as roommates. Mm. I thought this was like so nice, the way that they're like really dedicated to helping Lane have a relationship with her mom. I was like, that's so supportive of them.
Yeah, agreed. Mrs. Kim comes in and walks right up to them and says, you are girls. And then they can carry on with their evening and have some tea.
She's
and stuff.
Like, we'll clean this, we'll fix that window, you are girls, I'll have tea. Love it. And they're just like, okay, we'll bring it to you.
Dealing with it. Dealing with everything as well as she can. And I think this is the big scene next. We're back at the wedding reception where Kirk is the DJ.
Of course, yeah.
And a song comes on that might be familiar and significant to Gilmore Girls aficionados, called Reflecting Light. We got a couple of listener responses about this, talking about how they love the song that Luke and Lorelai dance to, called Reflecting Light, and it's so romantic and they both look amazing and all that stuff. So people love this scene especially, I think. And this song is also played during the wedding of Luke and Lorelai in the revival. I looked up a little bit about this song, and according to Reddit, so I'm not saying this is a definitive source, but according to Reddit, this song was written for this scene for Luke and Lorelai. And part of the inspiration for it was that Amy Sherman-Palladino had wanted the music, the original music for the show, to be kind of reflective. Reflective was one of the key words that she had brought up. And this person on Reddit pointed out that Luke means light. So the song is literally like reflecting Luke.
Oh.
And you can kind of see in this dance, when Luke and Lorelai take to the dance floor, Luke is kind of doing a waltz or whatever, as one of our listeners says. How is this a waltz? They're apparently dancing. I don't know. It seems kind of like a foot shuffle. But Luke seems pretty confident in this. And you can see Lorelai, as they're dancing, like, the chemistry kind of hits her throughout this dance. Like, you can kind of see her getting a bit bashful and, I don't know, just into it, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. And I thought that this was really the moment where things shift. Lorelai still has, I think, a lot of processing to do about the potential with Luke, but I think there's no coming back from having this romantic, chemistry-filled dance together to this song, mm-hmm. which is a very nice song.
Yeah. I like it. This is an iconic song, and Sam Phillips, like, I believe, is the person who scores for mm-hmm. Gilmore Girls 2 and whatnot. So I love the song. I love the dance. And I love the way, like, they take their time with it, and they mm-hmm. have, like, the camera kind of circling them as Lauren Graham gives us, like, so many different facial expressions yeah. of, like, she's so unsure throughout the whole thing. And then they're, like, slowly getting closer and closer the whole time. And by the end, they're, like, she's, like, resting her head on top of his shoulder and stuff. And it's just mm-hmm. so sweet. It's so good. And yet, yeah. I didn't give it my gazebo moment, which I thought I would.
I did.
Okay, yeah, good.
I did give it my gazebo moment. I meant to say that earlier and forgot. But yeah, I just love this. It's so, like, such a, it's a scene that you never forget. Yeah. It's one of the standout scenes of the whole mm-hmm. series, I think.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, the craft that went into it. Like, the
yeah.
choreography, the chemistry, the time, the music. Just mm-hmm. the setting of the wedding, it just, they lend it, it lends itself so much to, like, momentousness. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I like that they reused the song also for their wedding in the revival.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that wedding, but.
Me too.
I do
the
like
song. The song is a good part of it, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like I said, the intercut of these secondary plot lines. Not so good because
yeah,
the camera, like, pans out on Luke and Lorelai in that moment, and it could be the end of an episode, you know? Mm-hmm. It kind of has that feeling of a final scene. But instead, we just get Dean walking into the bar, like, to go from one beautiful thing to this sadness.
Yeah.
Ruining my vibe. Anyway, he's there to save the day with Rory. Who's talking about what's happened. She says, those were the last people I would have wanted to die in a car crash with, which I thought was a good way of describing, like, why she didn't vibe with them. They end up making this into a little date of sorts. Like, he stays, they get food. They learn Graham's credit card is still open, so they're going to put their food on his tab, which is at least genius, I will admit.
Yeah, I would do that.
And it seems like this is sort of, like, oh, everyone has kept talking about her dry spell, so she tried to go on a date. It didn't work out, but yet she still finds herself on a date of sorts with Dean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not much more to say about it right now.
Yeah, I gave this scene my Friday night dinner. It also connected to the follow-up of the scene later on. I was just, like, so annoyed that it broke up the beautiful wedding.
Yeah.
And so annoyed that it was Dean. And there's no mention yet about the fact that he's married. It does come up a little bit later, but it's just, like, he drove, I think it's, like, an hour to Yale, at least. He drove all the way out there. She also sat in that bar for over an hour just waiting for him when there were all these other possible solutions.
Yeah, and she didn't get food in that time, now that I think about it. Weird.
Yeah, she didn't even ask about the tab. Well, she might not have known.
Yeah.
Much about tabs. She's not a huge bar person, but still, yeah, I was just disappointed and upset.
Yeah.
But we can get back to some of the niceness as Luke and Lorelai walk home from the wedding. Lorelai is kind of recapping everything that's happened.
That's our job.
Yeah, seriously. Just to throw in a couple more listener feedbacks about the wedding. One person said that they love how happy Liz was, and another person said that they love the oddities at the wedding that were so on point. And just, I wanted to point out those last
someone like the gesture
listener feedback.
Yeah. So people beyond Lorelai were definitely fans of the wedding.
Yeah.
And she adds to the end of her list, well, maybe the dance was my favorite part. And this leads Luke to ask her out again. He's like, we should have fun again. and like maybe see a movie. And I think it's funny because like Luke was our double MVP last week. I really commend him for the change he's made, and he's like very confident here. He's making his moves finally, but he's doing everything except like explicitly express his feelings to her, which I think is my only complaint. And it's like it's leaving this room for a little bit of confusion on Lorelai's end, you know, where she's like, is this wedding a date? Is going to a movie a date? Like, he's not calling it a date here. And like you said, like, I think the moment really does happen in the dance. And then as he's walking away, she's like watching him. I think she's definitely thinking like it's something, you know, but it was kind of making me laugh to be like, that book definitely told you to like communicate a little more. But I think maybe it's like this was maybe the moment for him to express his feelings. And of course, like, it's hard, right? So he does like ask her out again, and maybe he's like, maybe on that date I'll finally say it, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, he's waiting for a moment, I guess. But I don't know. Yeah. Did you feel like this was the moment or no?
I think I partially disagree with you. That's fair, I think he should have made it clear that he's asking her on a date, but I don't know that it would have been helpful necessarily for him to say, look, I'm in love with you or I really like you or something like that, even at this point, because Lorelai really needs to wrap her head around this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that would have completely shut her down, at least for a while. But I kind of, I feel he should have at least said, we could go to a movie as a date or something to make it clear. Because as he walks away, he's like smiling and she's looking after him, like her jaw on the floor, just confused. Mm-hmm. But also it seems like happily confused.
Yeah happily, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, he could have been a bit more explicit about the purpose of them getting together. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it would have been helpful for him to really fully express his feelings.
That's a good point. That could scare her off. And typically when you start dating someone, you don't have to like confess your feelings. Like the dating part is usually what leads up to it. So I do see where you're coming from.
Yeah. We'll see next episode. Yes. A little bit more of that though. Mm-hmm. Exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our next scene is my gazebo moment. And I thought it was going to be the dance. I was like practically probably noted it already. But then when I was watching this scene made me like oddly emotional.
Yeah.
I cried too. Like I just, you know, it's between Jess and Luke and they're saying goodbye. And I was just thinking about it. I was like, now this scene is what we've waited so long for. Mm-hmm. It's a closure to the arcs that they've both been on for like two seasons now or so. And I just was like, you know, this whole time I've been thinking about season four, the slow burn between Luke and Lorelai finally happening. But it's like Jess and Luke are also an equally important slow burn in a really normal platonic way. I'm not being weird here. Like, you know, and they finally also get to communicate here where Luke has used Jess has used this book to finally tell Luke, like, thank you for everything you've done. Mm-hmm. I appreciated it. And Luke is able to say, like, I'm glad you said that. I think I knew that you were thankful, but it's good to hear it. And Jess is joking about, like, well, the book tells you that you need to let someone know you appreciate them if you want it returned. And so Luke says, you want it, like, reciprocated. And so he also says, like, I'll always be here for you, essentially. And Jess is like, cool. And then they he kind of like they extend for like a handshake, but then Luke brings him in for a real hug, and it's like one of the like hand on the back of the head hug, which is just so sweet. And I just thought it was like everything we wanted between for the two of them, and the way that they've both grown and are able to admit how much they care for each other. And it just sets up so well for them to have like a healthier relationship moving forward. And it just really buffers the sadness of the Jess and Rory thing later on, because on one hand you think like, oh, he reads the book, But then, unlike Luke, he doesn't get to see the reward because he's rejected. But he actually does get, I feel like, an even better reward, which is that he read the book and it helped him and Luke, you know, which is even more important than the Rory thing in my mind. I don't know. It was just, yeah. It was wonderful. I'm sure you're a fan too.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave this my gazebo moment number two because I just couldn't decide between the two.
Well, if I'd known that could happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I loved it. It was so heartwarming. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Luke saying, I'm here, Jess, I'm always here. And Jess actually accepting that for once instead of just like scoffing at it was so great. Yeah. And we talked last episode about how Jess is like, he's progressing, he's where he needs to be, even if like his living situation looks a bit slum like at the moment. He's like making the progress he needs to make, and I feel like this is a really good illustration of that. Like, he still has a ways to go with expressing his feelings for Rory and his desires there, but him and Luke are like reconciling and just like moving into a more supportive relationship is just wonderful.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. Yay. Let's, you know, bracket this, these good feelings to go into the final extended scene of this episode. We are back with Dean and Rory. He's walking her to her dorm room now. He says the campus is huge, which is a little humorous because they're walking through the single courtyard that we've seen of Yale, that we'll ever see of Yale. Like, oh yeah, what a huge campus. Yeah. And Rory is saying, thanks for saving me. They pause before her open door. And this is when they kind of address the elephant in the room of his marriage. And Rory is like, where is Lindsay? Like, well, no, she says, where does Lindsay think you are right now? Like, how can you just be out and about like this? And he's really evasive about that, and she then asks him, like, what's going on with you, kind of like, what's your relationship status? And I feel like that's what the Netflix bio was like. He confides in her, but he's actually like cut off from confiding in her when Jess arrives. And oh, what like an emotional high to such a low for him, right? Like, to go from like
Jess,
oh, the book, it helped me. Me and Luke, so great. And then he's probably like driving and like, it's going to go so great with Rory. And then he just sees her and Dean together and what probably like horrible deja vu for like all three people involved, right? Like, what a tough break for him. And I kind of wonder what Jess's mood would have been if he found Rory alone. Like, would he have been a bit calmer maybe? But he's just quite like dramatic and like kind of just like kind of what's the word when you're like I don't know, I can't think of it, but
explosive,
like spontaneous, kind of like he just really like is
reckless.
Yeah, maybe because he's like well, they get Dean to go away. Rory's like, go away to Dean, and Jess like follows her inside, and he's just making these big like gestures and claims and stuff where he's like, I want you to run away with me, let's go somewhere, let's live in New York. And he's like, I'm ready, you can count on me now, like, you know, we're supposed to be together. And Rory throughout this keeps saying like, no, she's like walking away, she's not really feeling this. I think she's seeming really overwhelmed. And Jess finally says, like, only say no if you really don't want to be together. And Rory pointedly says no, and just like silently leaves. And I mean, there's so many things we could say about this, but like, first of all, I feel like it's just such a matter of wrong timing, which is definitely a bummer. And it's also like, sadly, Jess is ready, but Rory is not ready, you know? And she hasn't seen any evidence of the fact that like she could count on him now. Like, he knows she could because he's gone through this stuff, but on her end, she has no idea that he's like worked on himself. And also, there's the whole she's re-enamored with Dean right now problem. And I don't know. I hand the mic to you. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. I feel like the whole thing was just a huge miscalculation from Jess mm-hmm. because I don't think she would have gone with him mm. even if Dean wasn't in the picture, because he's saying that she doesn't want to even be here right now. And that's not the truth at this point in yeah. her life. At this point in her life, Yale is where she wants yeah. to be. Like, she is living the life she wants at this point in time. If he asked her in a year and a half or whenever she takes her break, maybe that would be different. But by that point, he has also matured more. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he's just trying so hard to make a grand gesture and do like a rom-com type moment. Like, this really feels like a moment out of a rom-com. I just can't think of which one it is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just, it's really sad seeing him like this yeah. because you can tell he's really trying to express some sort yeah. of emotion. And even though he just did it so well with Luke,
yeah,
he's still not fully there yet. And he still doesn't fully like understand what needs to happen to make it happen with Rory. Yeah. And unfortunately, he won't until, let's pretend the revival was 10 years earlier, until after the end of the series when she breaks up with Logan,
yeah.
when they should actually be together. But
yeah, the like his line,
yeah.
like, you know, we're supposed to be together, did give me the vibe of like in another version of the show, mm-hmm. they would have returned to this as like, we oh, are yeah. supposed to be together. And it was just like a series of wrong timings until it was right, you know, mm-hmm. Which is so sad. So sad. Yeah.
I also, last episode, we were talking about how he like had been kind of expecting to hear from Rory mm. for a while. And I get the feeling that he imagined up a different version of Rory, perhaps. And
yeah.
like with the time apart, they miss so much change for each other that he is no longer like, they're no longer in tune with their current versions of themselves, yeah. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So he's kind of created this Rory to fill the void of the last year that they haven't been together. And that Rory is not the same Rory that exists in reality, who wants to stay at Yale. So I don't know.
Yeah. And the,
yeah, it's hard.
yeah. He's like thinking of a Rory who would want to leave with him and like leave it all mm-hmm. behind, because like this encounter, even though he's like read the book that Luke read, like it still feels very much like the I love you thing where he just kind yeah. of like hoists it on her. The only difference is that he's not leaving. He's saying like, oh, come with me, we'll be together. But like it's still kind of the same thing. And what really could have been the right thing to do might have been like, can we talk? And then he can like explain where he's been the last year or something, and then offer her that like more permanent cell phone to be like, let's talk in the future. Yeah. Like that could have been good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a painful end to the episode.
I know, to what is otherwise but such, you know, an uplifting episode, but that's kind yeah. of the story of the end of season 4, you know, like it really highs and lows.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I'm pretty sure next episode we get the Luke and Lorelai kiss, and then it ends with
another kiss.
Dean and Rory. Yeah. Well, who was your MVP for this episode?
I don't know. It's so hard. Like, last time I was really sure that it was Luke, and I still feel good things for Luke here. And Jess, although Jess just has this, like, such a miscalculation here at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think I will say Jess, though, because, like, I am just, like, really proud of what he accomplished and how he was dealing with Liz and Luke, and, like, this setback hopefully won't be too much of a setback for him, you know? And I think, in fact, we will see him later on, mm-hmm. and I think it will be true that he does get over this, luckily. And I don't know, I'll just blame Dean. Like, I'm gonna, in my mind, I think Jess was going to have a very calm conversation with Rory.
Yeah.
But then Dean just, like, set him off. And who could blame yeah. him? Because I think I would rage if I saw this, too.
Yeah, Dean, the huge Sasquatch.
With a little, like, facial hair now. I don't know how to feel about it.
I don't like it.
Yeah, it seems, like, too well-groomed and also barely there, you know? Like, if there was more...
Very, like...
And it looked more natural.
Yeah. Very teenage boy I'm growing a beard.
I've got a beard. How about you? Who's your MVP?
I'm giving a joint MVP to TJ and Liz.
Very nice. Their union of marriage and a union of MVP.
Yeah, I love them together. I'm glad we get a bit more of them in the next coming seasons, even though it's just sprinkled in here and there. But I liked their wedding. I would have really enjoyed being there. Yeah. It would have been fun.
Yeah.
And they're just cute together. Yeah, I'm happy for them.
Me too. And let's end on that happy note.
Agreed. Yeah. This was a behemoth of an episode.
Seriously.
And a lot happened.
We have a season finale next episode. So we've had some, we've got some heavy hitters. Luckily, we have the stamina.
Yeah. And a reminder, after our season finale, we'll have our season recap. And then we've got a couple of fun episodes planned.
With some guests.
Yeah. And then we'll be coming back for season 5 in the future after a break.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
talk soon. Thanks for listening to Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast.
Don't forget to rate and review us and share us with your friends. Join us on Instagram and TikTok at Talking Fast Podcast.
And join the conversation by emailing us your thoughts, talkingfastpodcast@gmail.com.